Secretary, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Justice Holland, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely. May it please the court. Santino Chakotay on behalf of the appellant in this matter, DeAndre Rogers. This appeal comes from a jury trial in the Superior Court where the defendant was convicted for murder second degree and related weapons offenses. The jury, during deliberations, sent two notes to the court, which are at the center of this appeal. One note asked for clarification as to the cruel, wicked...
Chakotay, can you speak into the microphone? I'm having trouble hearing you.
Sure. Let me see if my microphone can be lowered ever so slightly. Let me see if it can lower it. Is that better? Is that louder? Or is it still too dim?
Better.
Okay.
Part of the problem is your computer is blocking the sound.
I apologize. The center of this appeal is the two notes that the jury sent to the court in relation to clarification to the cruel, wicked, and depraved language in the murder second degree statute. And the second note, which asks for all of the Delaware Online articles for their review. We present two issues to this court on appeal. The first one being that the trial court plainly erred in failing to adequately define the terms cruel, wicked, depraved, and indifference to human life required to convict the defendant of murder second degree.
You're saying initially or ultimately?
Both, Your Honor. The record reflects that both the first instruction and the second instruction were insufficient pursuant to the language that this court has held in Waters versus State, a case that is still good law in this jurisdiction. The second issue that we bring to this court, that the court should have sua sponte inquired once the jury acknowledged in their note that they wanted all of the Delaware Online articles, that implies that they had some of them. And we would ask that the court remand for an inquiry as to the jury members at what did they actually possess in the jury room if they wanted all of the articles. Our argument to the first issue does rest on this court's holding in Waters versus State, a case also decided under plain error, which is the standard of review here. This court provided a well-defined interpretation of the meaning cruel, wicked, and depraved indifference to human life. In consulting the commentary to the Delaware Criminal Code for guidance into the terms and the definition of these terms, to differentiate between murder second degree and manslaughter, which is precisely the issue in this case. What the court suggested is that the commentary makes clear that the drafters of the code relied on the long-standing precedent in this state about the language of second-degree murder, the mens rea of malice aforethought. And although that language was taken away in 635, the murder second-degree statute, one looking at the historic significance of that language and jury instructions would recognize that there are concepts that are necessary for a jury to understand whether they're convicting on murder second or manslaughter.
Can you help me understand how the doctrine of plain error would apply in this context? If the trial judge was giving a pattern jury instruction that had been given countless number of times, how is that plain error if it's routinely, that's the way it's routinely done.
I don't believe the record reflects that this pattern jury instruction had been used routinely. I know that the state suggests that in their papers to this court. The Rogers decision would seem to suggest the opposite, Your Honor. The Rogers decision indicates that the language that this court borrowed in the Winsett decision, a Superior Court case from 1964, that those jury instructions were used innumerable times. So the plain error comes from the not recognizing that there have been other jury instructions given with respect to defining cruel, depraved, and indifference to human life with respect to this jury instruction. So also, I believe that the parties agreed for the judge to give this instruction, and that's why we're also in plain error territory today. There was an agreement amongst the parties that this was okay. Turning to the Waters decision, which, as I mentioned, is really the bedrock for where we find the language of what should be in a murder second degree jury instruction as it relates to the definition of the key terms cruel, wicked, and depraved. We do see reference to the idea that we're dealing in the area of implied or constructive malice. And whenever we go down that road with respect to how it relates to murder second degree, it's important to understand some of the language that this court in Waters said was very fundamental in nature, which is that these are terms that originated from that mens rea. So, for example, in the pattern jury instruction that the trial court gave in this case, there's nothing about adequate provocation, or there's nothing regarding premeditation or deliberation as that relates to murder first degree, and how second degree murder is done without justification or excuse, without adequate provocation. Those terms are essential, especially in a case like this, where the facts seem to suggest that that was a possible theory for the defense. And if the jury had a question, as their note seems to indicate, that they were struggling with this concept of what's cruel, wicked, and depraved, Waters tells us exactly that type of language needs to be conveyed to the jury. If we look more specifically at page 506 of the Waters decision, we see that the court wrestles with what to give the jury, what's the court to do. And the words they use is a more complete charge in these respects, a more complete jury instruction. In this case, the court utilized none of the explanatory language that Waters goes into at all. They simply stick to the commonly accepted meaning that's approved in the English language. That is not what the Waters court explained when they used the terms commonly accepted in the time-honored in this state's jurisprudence. Those are two distinct explanations. As I mentioned previously, a careful review of the Waters decision goes into some of the borrowed language from the Winsett opinion. reflecting on the record, Your Honors, it appears that the trial court did make an effort. He did read the Woodruff decision. I mean, he did. And I think, based on the time restraints, they struggled with what to tell this jury after the jury just openly explained that they were confused. You know, they wanted a clarification. And I think what the record reflects as with respect to what the trial court came back with is an abbreviated version of Waters.
Well, but you mentioned that the trial judge was aware of Waters and trying to do the right thing, and that means the lawyers were aware of the judge's struggle, including his struggle with Waters.
That's correct.
And brings me back to Justice Ridgely's question about plain error. If everybody knows we're talking about Waters and can read the decision, isn't it incumbent upon the defense attorney to say, you didn't give the explanation Waters required? It appears that the defense attorney was content with what the trial judge did by the absence of an objection, notwithstanding everyone knew they were struggling to deal with Waters.
Your Honor, I think that's an accurate representation of what was going on. I think the key is everybody was struggling here. I think if you, I believe it's on page 186 of the appendix when the decision is finally made that this is how we're going to handle this jury instruction. Is everybody on board? And everybody agreed. I think even before that, when we see the judge reading Waters, he's struggling with understanding some of the concepts in Waters and saying, well, I think we did that. In fact, he uses the terms in lockstep. Are we in lockstep with Waters? And I think based on the fact that we're dealing with a note given, you know, from the jury, they're in deliberations, they want to get back to the jury quickly, I think what's happening is there's an abbreviated reading of the case and an even more abbreviated, the summary of the Woodruff decision is not as simplistic as the trial judge in this case seems to allude to.
But let me, I have the same concern that Justice Holland expressed. Let me ask what may be the same question, but a different way.
Sure.
The dispute, if there was one, is how Waters impacted the phraseology of the second instruction to the jury. That is how that instruction should be crafted. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. The trial court attempted to parse through Waters and arrived at one conclusion, which was embodied in the instruction that was given.
Yes.
On appeal, your side contends that there was another construction that was the correct construction. Correct?
Correct.
So, at most, don't we have here, or at worst, legal error, but not plain legal error?
In attempt to answer your honest question, the plain error, which we concede, is because the objection was not made, as Justice Holland pointed out. That's how we arrive at plain error. I believe the state agrees that it is plain error, unless this court feels that it's, if we're not under the plain error standard.
Well, and the reason we, well, it's plain error, unless there was a waiver. So and then if there was a waiver, in the absence of an objection, notwithstanding the fact that Waters was the known precedent, it's something that we would say was considered, not commented on, deemed to be waived, address it in a Rule 61.
Sure.
Let's put that aside.
Okay.
The real issue here on plain error is what appears to be your argument is that the pattern instruction is erroneous as a matter of law and prevents the jury from discharging its function to the extent it's inconsistent with Waters. And the trial court's attempt to save the incomplete pattern jury instruction with a supplemental Waters instruction also failed as a matter of law because it was still inadequate to permit the jury to discharge its function.
That's correct.
That's your position.
That is our position.
Okay.
Moving on to the second issue with respect to the Delaware Online articles, that note also came back at the same time as the note inquiring about the language for murder second degree. The argument that we make here, and we do, this was not made in the court below, we understand that, involves the issue of whether this jury had already possessed some of the online articles based on the language that was in the note. In particular, as the transcript makes clear, they quoted the language, "Can we have all of them in quotations?" We would suggest that that implies that possibly through some website resourcefulness by one of the modes of the jury or by other means in this technological world, they obtained some of these articles during their deliberations. We contend that a sua sponte inquiry at that moment by the trial judge should have been conducted by each member of the jury to determine what effect this might have had in the deliberations. Absent that, we, you know, for that reason, we would ask that this court, at the very least, remand that so that question can be asked to the original jury. If the court doesn't have any questions, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Very well.
Thank you.
If it please the court, Timothy Donovan for the state. I think I've made my position vis-a-vis plain error clear in my briefs, and unless the court has any specific questions about that, I'd like to move on to the underlying merits dealing with Waters and what Waters stands for and some of the problems involved. Waters went to, I believe it was State v. Wins at a pre-code case as a possible instruction. Now, I think as the code commentary makes clear and Winsett makes clear and all the pre-code cases make clear, the elusive distinction was not between second-degree murder and manslaughter. The elusive distinction required lots and lots of instructions between first and second-degree murder, the distinction between express malice and implied malice, the distinction that I think is never really quite made clear. I mean, the code commentary does note in its final paragraph that it should finally be noted that one court suggested that the sole reason for the distinction between first and second degree murder under common law was to limit the scope of the death penalty. That first degree murder was an automatic death penalty, and that there was absolutely no validity or even logic in the distinction, and that may very well be the case. But the code and the code commentary gives the code short shrift, but the code makes the distinction very clear. First degree murder is simply intentional murder. It's not a depraved, not necessarily a depraved heart murder. Defendant, the accused, intends to commit murder and does so. It could be done for the best of motives. It could be a mercy killing. But it's an intentional murder, and the evidence must suggest to the rational trier of fact, to the jury, that the defendant indeed intended to kill. If it's not intentional murder, then the jury moves down the ladder, as they did here, to consider the other degrees of homicide. Second degree murder, and manslaughter, which were the other two they were instructed on. Both of those are defined as a reckless mens rea. And I think, as the code makes clear, second, this distinction between the two reckless mens reas, between second-degree murder and manslaughter, is really one of degree. If the defendant does something, the jury is not convinced. The jury was instructed to take the down-the-ladder acquittal, to consider first-degree murder. If they're not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt of the intent to kill, then they move down and consider second-degree murder. While considering second-degree murder, the jury had a question about the word phrase, the strange phrase, using common language, but still other archaic sound to it, cruel, wicked, and depraved indifference to human life.
What's your position with regard to the relationship between the pattern jury instruction and Waters? Is it your position that the pattern jury instruction comports with Waters, or it's no longer necessary to comply with Waters?
Waters is ambiguous in this regard. Waters was dealing with two issues. One issue was that the phrase cruel, wicked, and depraved indifference to human life was unconstitutionally vague. And this was an argument the defendant raised based on the then recent case of Godfrey v. Georgia, in which similar type of language was found unconstitutionally vague in the context of the statutory aggravating circumstances in a death penalty case. And the defendant was making, by analogy, was saying, well, the phrase in second-degree murder statute, our statute, is likewise unconstitutionally vague, therefore the entire statute's unconstitutional, therefore, I need to be acquitted of that charge. And the court rejected that argument, but the court also considered what is the proper jury instruction. And I believe the judge and also the pattern jury committee was looking at this language in Waters at 504. Since the language is not defined in our criminal code, the words in question are to be given their, quote, commonly accepted meaning, Levendel Code, Section 221C, in order to avoid the objectionable vagueness inherent in the language. The trial court should have charged the jury accordingly. That is, accordingly, that in accord with 221C, to inform the jury, as the judge did in this case in the supplemental instruction, that these are not terms of art. These words don't have any specialized legal meaning. These are the words that you use in your common everyday speech. These are your words. These are not our legal words. And that, it seems to me, is the language that the judge concentrated on in Waters, rather than then jump to the pre-code, very elaborate Winsett-type instruction, which apparently is not how the pattern jury committee read Winsett either, or read Waters either, because the instruction given here, which was based on the pattern jury instruction, gives very short little dictionary kinds of definitions for the words. These are common dictionary, not non-legal, non-term of art definitions.
Well, we need to come to grips with whether the committee got it right. If we assume the committee was right on Winsett, as I understand what you've said so far, is the pattern jury instruction, to the extent it left out the line, these are not terms of art, give them their plain meaning, that omission was corrected by the supplemental instruction, and therefore the pattern jury instruction plus the supplemental instruction adequately permitted the jury to discharge its function. So then the only thing left is, did the committee get it right on Winsett? And what's your position?
Well, the committee got it right, I think, on Waters. Waters is looking at Winsett, and it could be read as addressing the issue of unconstitutional vagueness. Look, these words have been defined for juries in these elaborate ways without necessarily suggesting that this be the type of instruction now in what I think it was 1982 that should be given. And apparently the pattern jury committee, and again, in In more recently, 1992, in Holmes, this court held the instruction given mirrors the Superior Court pattern jury instruction for murder second degree developed after Waters v. State. So it seems for quite some time now, people have been thinking that, you know, that looking at Waters and saying, well, this does not mean we give the elaborate pre-code Winsett type instruction. It does mean that we give the jury enough of a definition to inform them that these terms don't have any specialized legal meaning. That's the important. These are your words. You look at them. And these words are to impress you that to find murder in the second degree as opposed to simple recklessness, this is an extreme form of recklessness, the type of, well, you know, the facts of this case where you fire a pistol six times at somebody at close range and hit him four or five times. You know, that's, well, that's more than just simple recklessness. Now, maybe there was no intent to kill. Maybe you decide that firing a gun six times at close range at somebody, hitting him four or five times is because of where the wounds were or so. But, you know, this is more than just being reckless. This is something, a greater degree of recklessness. And that's what the words, cruel, wicked, and depraved indifference to human life are meant to convey to the jury. But I think the important lesson to be taken from Waters is that the jury be told that these are their words. If they have any question about them, a simple dictionary definition of the type used in the pattern jury instruction will alert them to that, and certainly telling them that these are not terms of art will also alert them to that. I mean, that's the state's position. The court has no questions.
Are you going to address the second issue?
I'm sorry. Oh, the second issue. Well, my position on that one is a little different. Was that, well, plain error has to be plain, and I think that's an inference too far from that jury note. They wanted to see during the testimony of the defendant, he started referring to Delaware Online articles. And this was by way of saying, oh, I read this and I read that, and I see maybe I was mistaken, and then there was this other murder, and I thought somebody was out to get me for a revenge killing, but killed the wrong guy, and that's why I left the jurisdiction. That's all that had to do with it. Nobody, he was examined on direct examination, he was cross-examination, and nobody ever entered in any of these articles, either newspaper articles or online articles, into evidence. They were just used to examine and cross-examine the defendant on that particular point, why he fled the jurisdiction. And the jurors wanted to see the articles. They said, can we see the new Delaware Online article? And then they wrote at the bottom all of them and underlined them. Don't just give us a few, give us all. Now, why the judge, and nobody else did, neither the lawyers did either, are going to jump from that note to say, ah, maybe the jurors now have some online articles and we should, you know, inquire about that. That is not an inference that one draws from that note. So I might say this court has made very clear in plain error from Wainwright on. I mean, the error had to be plain on the face of the record, and this one just not plain. This is an inference on top of an inference, you know, speculation that this is going on. That's my only position on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Move it down. Perfect. Thank you.
My friend, Mr. Donovan, does bring up a point worth noting, which is that there were two issues before the court in Waters. And if we examine them, I think we get some more clarity as to what the Waters court is essentially adopting with respect to these terms. Commonly accepted meaning. They were faced with an argument about vagueness, so they had to address that. And in addressing the vagueness argument on page 504, which is the language that Mr. Donovan is reading, is that this language is not defined in our criminal code, so the words in question are to be given their commonly accepted meaning. This is to avoid, as the court says, objectionable vagueness inherent in the language. If we continue to read further, we get a sense of what more is necessary with the jury instruction, and that is, as the court points out, with the reference in the commentary. Again, the commentary is citing to the Winsett decision, to implied malice clearly in mind, we look, as the trial court should have, to the long-standing precedent in this state for the adequate jury instruction in this case. If 221 was all that was necessary, the court would have said that. That's what 11 Delaware Code 221 says. If the terms are not defined, you give them their commonly accepted meaning. Waters tells us that is not enough. You have to provide the definition as it stands in this jurisdiction. And there is a long history between murder second degree, first degree, and manslaughter that this jury should have had during their deliberations. And the significance, I would mention, as which you haven't mentioned some of the facts of this case, the record does show that there was a struggle in this case prior to the shooting, and that there were some physical altercations at the crime scene. If the Waters jury instructions were utilized, we can see that there is language about adequate provocation in that sense. That is the language that should have gone into this jury. And for that reason, we ask that the court reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. The court will take this matter under advisement, and we will adjourn.